Welcome to Evolutionary Collective Conversations with Patricia Albert. The next evolutionary leap for humanity is the critical shift from individual to global consciousness. This higher level of development takes us beyond our individual self-concern into expanding capacities for unity, interconnectedness, evolutionary relating, and collective intelligence. Contemporary spiritual teacher and visionary Patricia Albert engages deep and probing dialogues with frontline luminaries shaping the next wave of conscious evolution. Please welcome Patricia Albert.
Hi, everybody. Welcome. Before I get into the topic of today and my wonderful guest, I want to let you know I'm very excited about announcing that I have a new book that's coming out this October, and it's called Evolutionary Relationships, Unleashing the Power of Mutual Awakening. And you can learn more about the book and download the first three chapters starting today. You've just begun it today, is at evolutionaryrelationshipsbook.com. So that's, again, www.evolutionaryrelationshipsbook.com. And you can download the first three chapters, and I'm excited to share it with you. So today, the topic is our biocosmic identity. And I'm here with Duane Elgin, who is, I've been excited to actually talk with him just in general. He's an internationally recognized speaker and author, and some of his books include The Living Universe, The Promise Ahead, Awakening Earth. And in 2006, he received the International GOI Peace Award in recognition of his contribution to a global vision of consciousness and lifestyle that fosters a more sustainable and spiritual culture. And he lives in the Bay Area where I live. And at this moment in our history, you know, it's becoming more and more apparent, I think, to many of us that we need a new understanding of who we are and what our role is in the universe, and one that's informed by a deep sense of unity and connection to the evolutionary process that's brought us to this moment. And in Duane's recent book, a quote from him, but you're going to get to be with him in a moment. The most urgent challenge facing humanity is not climate change or species extinction or unsustainable population and growth. Rather, it is how we understand the universe and our intimate relationship with it. And we're going to get into as much as we can about, you know, what this identity is, what reality is, and what our biocosmic identity is, which is quite important. So, Duane, thank you for being here with me today.
Thank you, Patricia. It's wonderful to join you.
Yeah. I'm excited to see. You know, we're, you know, our worldview, you know, as you know more than almost anyone, or our cosmology impacts the way we live in the world, you know, the way we see what we see as possible and what reality actually is to us, and the future that we could give our lives to. So, and mostly we inherit our worldview, you know, it's unconscious. We just think reality is a certain way. So I would really love to hear you speak about the current worldview that most people are looking from within, and then to speak more about the living universe.
Yes.
Perspective.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, the current worldview, I summarize this very simply, very graphically, actually. Current worldview looks at the universe as essentially dead at the foundations, mm-hmm. non-living at the foundations. It's just essentially empty space and non-living inanimate matter. So the current worldview says, well, look, there's just a bunch of dead stuff out there, and let's exploit that which is dead on behalf of the few that are alive, and that's mostly us. And so the idea, the worldview that the universe is essentially non-living at its foundations, naturally then gives rise to an exploitive mindset, a more selfish mindset that really privileges we that see ourselves as most alive. And so out of that has come the Industrial Revolution. It's been very powerful. It's been very successful. But it hasn't had restraint to recognize that we are actually harming the underlying ecological foundations for our long-term future. And that, in turn, is giving rise to new questions in science, new insights from spirituality, and it's pointing towards another foundational reality, and it is that at the foundations, the universe is not dead, but alive. Now, if the universe is a living system, and there's every reason to believe scientifically, as well as in terms of direct experience, it is a living system, then our aliveness is a part of a larger aliveness. Mm-hmm. And we want to take care of that which is most alive, because it's our aliveness is directly implicated and connected with it. So when we shift towards the view, and this is an ancient view as well, that the universe is actually a living system of which we are an integral part, we then shift towards a disposition of care, of compassion, of awareness of how we are impacting the rest of life. So returning to your notion that the worldview, dead or alive, has a profound impact upon how we relate to the world out there as well as ourselves inside in here.
Mm-hmm. And from the perspective that, you know, that you've been writing about, the universe has been alive since the Big Bang.
Yes.
Okay, so.
Absolutely.
It's been alive since the beginning. So. So the evolution of going from what we perceive as just matter, you know, the geosphere, to the biosphere, to, you know, like animals and plants and birds and, you know, at least on Earth, and then to humans that have, you know, some kind of self-reflective consciousness, it seems. How do you see where we are? If it's always been true that it's all alive and it's all interconnected, which I agree with you, how do you see then evolution within that?
Great question. So here's the universe, a living system that was born 13.8 billion years ago. And over the course of those billions of years, it has progressively given birth to an extraordinary garden of life forms. And we're one of those. And so what we are is a life form that knows it has life. And the American Indians, has spoke of three miracles. The first miracle is that anything is here at all.
Right.
Second miracle is that living things exist, plants, animals, and so on. And the third miracle is that living things exist that know they exist. And that's ourselves. We have a reflective consciousness, and we know that we know. We know that we're here. We know that we exist. Now, that's a powerful insight, but it's so powerful that often it results in forgetting the first miracle, that anything is here at all. How
right.
did it, anything get here at all? Well, that's a miracle of creation of the highest order, and scientific evidence, experiential evidence, now points towards that beginning universe as a living system. More than 2,000 years ago, Plato said the universe is a single living creature that contains all living creatures within it. So this is an ancient idea. That the universe is a living system that contains life within it and so on. But it's an insight that we have forgotten several hundred years ago with the advance of science. We separated ourselves from that aliveness. We said, no, it's really dead stuff. Let's get our happiness from more and more matter. That's where we'll find meaning and our pleasure and life. And so we've really lost our way in some respects, at the same time that we have gained in empowerment and creativity and all the rest. I don't want to diminish the learning of the last 200-300 years, but recognize that we have, to some extent, lost our way. The deepest wound that we have as a species, I feel, is our separation from the living universe.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can heal that separation with the living universe, it's going to heal our relationship with friends, with our intimate relationships, with our communities, with our organizations, and so on. So it cuts through all of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it would seem too that, because I'm not sure how people are listening, obviously, but you could listen to what you're saying from a place of considering, you know, that the living universe is still only on a gross level, like on a matter level, you know, that you and I are embodied creatures and, you know, my cats and my backyard and, you know, the bay and the fish and, you know, there's a sense of the sort of Gaia, you know, the feeling of physical mass, matter, suns, moons, you know, what we're aware of on a gross level is kind of what is the living universe. But what about the subtle level? What about the causal level? What about other dimensions of existence? Because the unity that I experience, it, you know, in my own consciousness is, it feels like it includes that, but it's rooted somewhere else.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Indeed. Indeed. Let's look at the science here.
Yeah. Yeah.
So science really is wonderful, helping us cut through the superstition and see the extraordinary nature of the universe in which we live. And until 10, 20 years ago, people looked around and said, well, look, the only thing that's real is what I can touch with my senses. Mm-hmm. I can see
right.
it, I can taste it, I can feel it. And if I can't touch it with my senses somehow, it's not real. And so that was the dominant paradigm. That was the major view of things. And so it was a materialistic view. And then science comes along and says, you know, we made a mistake. Actually, 96% of the known universe is invisible. You can't touch it. You can't see
right.
it. It's dark matter. It's dark energy. And the 4% that we thought was all of it is actually just the tiniest fraction of what's here. And so we live within almost an entirely invisible universe of dark matter, dark energy, and because we're a part of that universe, it means 96% of ourselves, at least, is invisible.
Mm-hmm.
We're 96% invisible. So you say, Patricia,
yeah.
well, I feel there's something more here
than yeah.
just the stuff I see. And I'm saying, yes. And science is saying, yes. It's extraordinary that the overwhelming majority, 96% of who and what we are is invisible. And that's then taking us into the realms of new ways of looking at reality and new possibilities of aliveness.
Yeah, no, thank you. Because it's interesting, like there's a, you know, in the last, I don't know, 30 or 40 years, you know, you and I are, you know, similar age, you know, sort of baby boomer
yep.
realm. And, you know, a lot of what spiritually, you know, in some ways was available, you know, had more to do with a kind of embrace of the earth and our bodies and ourselves, you know, from a spiritual perspective and the aliveness and all of that. And that it always felt limiting to me. You know, it always felt like, you know, okay, I'm being in the moment. I'm tasting the strawberry. I'm fully here. But it felt literally like this is not even close to everything, even though it's very beautiful and it's very
yeah.
rich and it, you know, sort of dimensionally opens up into other kinds of things. The unity, you know, the living universe that you're speaking of to me, you know, and the way to access it, you know, embraces the 96% of the dimension of our connectedness that's invisible.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And to say, a lot of people have a paradigm of consciousness alone, if you will, that, well, it's at the foundation, it's just all consciousness.
Right.
Now, I feel consciousness is at the foundation, but I think more than consciousness is at the foundation, if the foundation is,
yeah.
in fact, alive. And aliveness includes, in my cosmology, love. Love at the foundation, and not only life, but love. It includes luminosity and light. We talk about enlightenment when we wake up. We become transparent to the light that infuses the universe, the light love. We become conscious of the music of creation. At the foundations of it all isn't this gray mechanical hum, but rather the resonance of a living system infused with love at the foundation, but giving us great freedom in which to learn. So a living system is so rich. It's so rich, and it has not only consciousness, but it has light, and it has love, and it has meaning and purpose. So
yeah, and
this is an extraordinary new paradigm that we're moving into.
Yes, yeah, I completely agree. Sometimes they call it the communion paradigm.
Yes, yes.
And I really appreciate the way you're speaking, because I don't have the science, you know, I can't stand in that realm, you know, and really wander around and be utterly intelligent. And you can, which I deeply appreciate, because you're bringing a richness to this living universe, you know, that the living universe includes, you know, all of those dimensions and more. And the fact that as humans, you know, we are at least to some degree we have self-reflective consciousness. I believe, I'd love to hear your take on this. I actually think we're moving beyond self-reflective consciousness.
Yes.
And that we're moving into a kind of, it's almost like we were once unconscious and spontaneous, and we're moving beyond into like a hyper a consciousness that moves into this natural spontaneity that is not kind of witnessing and separate, because witnessing even has a slight separation in it.
Definitely.
And I think there's something much more being to be orchestrated by that which is greater, and to be a wholehearted participant in that is a kind of consciousness that I think that we're moving into.
Yeah. I think that is really important to point out this evolution that is underway. And I see three steps along the way.
Okay.
You mentioned reflective consciousness. Mindfulness is just exploding culturally. A witnessing consciousness, an observing consciousness, just the capacity to pay attention. Show up. Just be there.
Right.
And that's the witnessing consciousness. And you're absolutely right. There's an observer and that which is observed. There's a witness and that which is seen. And so there is a very explicit and very conscious duality there.
Mm-hmm.
And but if the watcher and the watch become progressively more aware, if I pay attention, that which I am paying attention to will become progressively more engaged in my consciousness, and the distance between the watcher and watch will diminish until finally it's just unity. I am at one with what I am seeing. Doesn't mean I go away, but it means the totality, the unification experience is there.
Mm-hmm.
And so beyond reflection is unity. But beyond unity is the deeper insight that's now emerging in the world, and it is that the unity isn't a static unity. This is a very dynamic world that's emerging moment by moment by moment, and with that dynamism is creativity. And so we go beyond a more of a static, passive unity into a very dynamic, creative flow. And we're just moving now, I think, in spiritual understanding into the realm of embodied creativity as communities. And so this is a new realm of understanding and engagement with the world. And it is an evolutionary collective that's seeking to be born right now in the world, as the whole species tries to find its way into a more sustainable and meaningful future.
Yeah. It's interesting. What is your take on, I mean, one of the things that I've found, you know, in my particular niche of a way of working with people that I feel is wildly effective. You know, I mean, where I was just in New York over the weekend with the Evolutionary Collective, and there are people, you know, a group of people who we've been working ongoingly, and you know, are so willing and so open and so, you know, really attuned, you know, really capable of following where I'm pointing. You know, I'm like, go here, and they go there. Mm-hmm. And so we were sharing in the practices that we were doing. So we don't do individual meditative practices. We do practices that are with each other in different combinations of twos, threes, and more. And the Beatrice Boutreau was, who was a a student and a wonderful author who wrote a lot about Sri Aurobindo and Teilhard de Chardin. She talks about, because I'd never heard this, you know, we've been doing it, but I'd never heard the word spandic energy. And the way she describes it is from center to center, you know, from the deepest center, I call it an origination point, to your origination point, you know, to this deep center of self that is not even the soul. It's like deeper than that. You know, it's less, what do you call it? Even individuated. Like it's you and it's home, but it's more of an opening. It's more than 96%. You know, it's more that invisible consciousness. But anyway, when you and I are together and the spandic energy is, I am, may you be fully. Do you know what I mean? Like literally it's life giving. It's like love. You know, I don't know if you have children, but like when you have kids, you feel that incredible, like spandic love that just literally leaps from the deepest part of you to them. And you want them to have life and love and everything that's possible for them, you know, fully and completely. You want to bestow that, you know, somehow. And the spandic love is so powerfully palpable that when two human beings share that, or you share that with more people, it awakens something that is so unifying and in and for one another. And it activates creativity and love and a kind of connection that so transcends any separation or any competition or any, you know, I have to worry about my own survival kind of sense. And so to me, that's the, like the next iteration of how do we meditate rather than becoming mindful. It's this spandic awakening together.
Well, yes. You know, returning to our theme here, biocosmic.
Yeah. Right.
If I'm just sitting here, if I go into your meeting, let's say I'm sitting here there in a circle of people and I say, you know, I'm just this body sitting here. That's
right.
All there is. I'm just a biological body sitting here. There is body across the room. We're basically separate. And somehow maybe I can talk across the room and feel a connection. That's one common way of being in the world. Do that all the time. Happens all the time. The biocosmic says, hey, you know, 96% of myself is not just sitting here in this biological container, this biodegradable container, but rather it's expansive out there in the ecology of a living universe, and the size of my cosmic body depends upon the size of my consciousness. And if I extend my awareness out to this field of people within which I'm participating right now, I actually literally engage in their life field. And to the extent that I bring an affirming, positive, and awakening awareness into that life field, it helps catalyze the entire field.
Absolutely.
And so the notion that we're biocosmic is really grounded in hard science, but then it takes us from hard science into the realm of transforming our relationships, because we know it's true. There's reality, just like you were saying, Patricia. There is a reality here that you can just feel, you can know. And a statistic, let me throw a statistic in just for fun.
Sure, I love them.
It has to do with we're waking up. We are measurably waking up as a society. And I've got data for the U.S. primarily, some in Europe. But in the United States, in 1962, 22% of the American adult population said they had had a profound mystical experience. And this is the realm of the cosmic dimension of ourselves. 22%. Yeah, I've had a profound mystical experience of communion with the larger universe. Now, we go ahead a half century, and that has grown from 22% to now over 49%. In other words, we're as much a nation of mystics as we are a nation of materialists in terms of direct experience. But we're not being told about the mystical consciousness dimensions of life, the aliveness at the foundations of the universe. So our experience in many ways is ahead of our ability to explain what's going on. So it's really important to not only have explanations, but also what you're doing with the Evolutionary Collective, mm-hmm. to bring that into direct experience and say, well, of course that makes sense intellectually, and of course it makes sense experientially. I've had that experience. And then as a society, we can begin, based upon our experience and our understanding, move into a more sustainable, promising future.
Mm-hmm. God, that's great. I bet it's even more now, right? I mean, it's probably growing exponentially, like really fast every year.
Yes. But conservatively, I can say measurably half of the American population has had a profound mystical experience. Mm-hmm. There was another survey done by Gallup, a huge organization, and it asked people, have you ever had a profound religious experience or awakening that changed the direction of your life? And the results were stunning. 41% of the American adults, about 80 million people, said the statement completely applies to them. They've had a profound awakening that changed the direction of their life. 41%.
Wow.
Look, this is happening. This is not, this isn't 4%. This is happening, and what we're lacking is the leadership to reflect back on the American public and say we are going somewhere as a species. Mm-hmm. We're waking up. We're moving into a new future of possibility and aliveness. This is exciting news. We're not getting that feedback. So bless you for being out there, Patricia, and catalyzing this.
Interesting. It's so true because I obviously was in New York, and in New York it's still a very, materialistic kind of society, it looks like. You know, I mean, obviously you walk down Fifth Avenue, it feels like that. And, but it's interesting that, like you said, the dominant conversation is not, like, it still looks like someone's weird if they speak that that's the dominant reality is this bio, you know, like a biocosmic identity rather than we're just, you know, humans and everything. The only thing that is real is solid and measurable. And, you know, it doesn't seem intelligent. I don't think our universities and our, the people that supposedly are the authorities in our culture don't speak that way.
No, they do not. And so that's a part of the wounding that we have, because those that we most trust, the authorities in academia and so on, are living in that dead universe, and so are the business people. And here we are trying to make a life in a living universe and make meaning out of that and relationships that matter and all the rest. And so this is deep wounding that's at work, and deep healing beyond that.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, too. I can feel the inspiration of how do we get the conversation more mainstream so that, because people, you know, in my experience, and, you know, maybe I live in a bubble, it's possible, but, you know, when you really talk to people in a way that makes some sense around this, they get it. They really
Absolutely.
Do.
Yes. I find that if I stand in a room of just folks and I've got, a dozen people, I'll ask, you know, how many people see the universe as essentially dead at the foundations and how many see it as alive? And it comes out roughly 50-50 in my experience. And it's so fascinating because the people that say it's dead are absolutely convinced. Nah, you're crazy if you think this thing is alive at the foundation. On the other hand, the people that say it's alive say you're crazy if you think the beauty, the magnificence of this has emerged out of deadness. And there is an amazing, people have strong views about this from the get-go.
Yeah.
And we're already grounded in this sensibility, but it hasn't really been raised into the cultural consciousness.
Yeah, and that's what, a la, why we're having this conversation.
Yeah.
So speak more to, so the evolutionary part of it, you know, obviously it's living always, but now it's developing. I mean, there's a certain kind of development in consciousness, you know, in form, but mostly it seems in the consciousness realm. What is your sense of, you know, I have my own ideas, but from a scientist, you know, a scientific perspective, the fact that there are 7.5 billion people and it's going quickly, you know, we'll have by what, 2050, 9 billion people. Yeah. What effect do you think that has in this, shifting into a more bio, cosmic sense of who we are and that our consciousness is shifting? Like, what does all those people have to do with our consciousness shifting into a different, paradigm?
Well, I'm not entirely sure. That's a complex question, but it seems to me that this is integral to the transition to a workable future. That if we persist on a path of materialism and in a sense separation and looking at the self and so on, to the exclusion of others, we're in a world of hurt as a species fast, and that means within the lifetime of people alive right now. Now, this is moving very quickly, and if we're going to shift towards a more sustainable future, we have to have a different impulse in life. Right now, we're saying, well, look, my happiness is in my consumption. The more I consume, the more happy I must be. The advertising keeps telling me that, and that's my identity as well. Mm-hmm. Now, what if we shift our identity and our sources of satisfaction towards aliveness? Where can I find aliveness in relationship, in the classroom, in organizations, in art, and so on? If we create a culture and an economy of aliveness instead of an ego economy, an aliveness economy.
Right.
And aliveness doesn't cost a lot of money. Aliveness is not expensive materially, but it does cost spiritually. You have to invest your soul and yourself in that aliveness. So it's really shifting a culture towards a different foundation, from a materialistic foundation, really, that represents 4% of reality, to an aliveness foundation that represents 96 to 100% of reality.
Okay.
So this is foundational to our evolution.
Okay. So I want to keep going on that question. We're going to take a short break right now, and then I'm going to be back with Dwayne Elgin, and we're going to continue to talk about our biocosmic identity.
You're listening to Patricia Albert on Evolutionary Collective Conversations. Patricia has a new book coming out this fall entitled Evolutionary Relationships, Unleashing the Power of Mutual Awakening. To learn more and download 3 free chapters, go to evolutionaryrelationshipsbook.com.
Okay, it's Patricia Albert, and I am here with Dwayne Elgin, and we're speaking about biocosmic identity. And I proposed to him, you know, just kind of like in the evolutionary movement, you know, what is the significance of the fact that we also are having more and more humans on the planet, you know, as part of the reality. And so I kind of want to continue in that vein. You know, Teilhard, Dwayne, you know, spoke about convergence, you know, the fact that as we are growing and developing, you know, as this living universe is evolving, the consciousness of humans is obviously where it seems like evolution is evolving at the moment. You know, we have the biggest impact on the planet, and we are evolving. You know, we actually are, like you said, in America, you know, if more and more people are having spiritual experiences, then something's happening. And so to me, you know, one of the things that he said that I experienced with a lover, and then obviously with the people that I'm working with now, differently but similarly, is that when human consciousness, when we come together and we experience sharing with each other from that biocosmic identity, from something that isn't separate, it's not egoic sharing, because when we share, you know, our stories or our information, or you know, we can even be sort of open-hearted and really, you know, be sort of lovingly, you know, sharing with each other, we're still separate. And so there's a kind of unity that does not occur, even though it's lovely and human and, you know, can be really sweet. But there's a kind of unification of coming into the experience of consciousness together that does not occur. And he was saying that the fact that we are now, we're on a round planet, and we're, you know, beginning to run into each other, literally, you know, like the planet is getting more and smaller as far as, you know, I was just in New York, and I live there. I've lived there on and off since when 1976. And, you know, there's a lot more people there. And Northern California is similar. You know, I mean, the traffic and the people, it's just getting more and more full. That he felt, and I agree with it, that if we learn how to share this spondic energy, you know, we learn how to share a kind of consciousness where we are inside each other and we are participating in something that is in that invisible, then humans start to actually bond in a way that is conscious, so that we're building like what he called the interbeing. So it's not just that we sort of are all one. I mean, we can all be one, but nobody knows it, which is a very, that's an unconscious kind of unification. When you know it and you're actually building the spondic energy, you're actually exchanging energy in a very real and conscious way. There's some awakened collective being that is really different than just an unconscious, like family, let's say, or, you know, group of people that aren't experiencing that quality of consciousness and relatedness.
Yes. Very much. I think our future depends very much on the awakening of that that deeper shared consciousness you're speaking about. You talk about a growing number of people on the planet, and that's going that is pushing us to wake up in many ways. When I was born, there was just over 2 billion people on the planet, and they're now over about 7.5 billion. World population, it is more than tripled in one lifetime. And with any luck, world population will more than quadruple in my lifetime. So, that's part of the material reality we have to cope with. And the Earth needs the vision of a world in profound transition to sustain that level of population. So as I look at the future, there are two things that we really need. One is a vision. How in the world can we see our way into a more promising future, and the kind of evolutionary potential you speak of, Patricia, is integral to a vision of real promise and hope. Otherwise, mm-hmm. the vision is one of just survivalism, and it's a mean-spirited world that's going to emerge if we can't come together in that larger sensibility. So a vision of that, an experience of that, that's critical. Now, in addition, the human family needs a voice for its collective future. And currently, we have the technology to have that voice operative, but we're not using it. And right now, just over 50% of the people on this planet have access to the Internet. For the first time in human history, we could talk to one another. We could do this. Mm-hmm. It's over 50%. Now, what if we said, well, let's have an Earth voice. A voice that goes beyond any nation state or any particular group in their particular preferences. What is the voice that speaks for the Earth as a whole? And if we can begin to have the empowerment and the sense of identity of ourselves as Earth citizens, a voice that empowers us as Earth citizens, to be heard as Earth citizens, and then the sense of self-esteem that grows from that. This is critical, I think, to our future, and combine that with our sense of visionary possibility for building a sustainable future. We've got a real, we've got hope here. And so this seemingly subtle, invisible shift towards a sensibility of aliveness, a biocosmic sense of ourselves, a sense that we're not here just to consume, we're here to grow, to learn how to live in a living universe. There's an ancient Greek saying, it says, light your candle before night overtakes you. Mm-hmm. Now, if we live in a dead universe, when the body dies, the light goes out. But if we live in a living universe, when the body dies, well, then we see we are the light. So light your candle before night overtakes you. Well, the candle is lit right now, the candle of consciousness, and we can keep that light alive and growing into the deep ecology of a living universe. And I think that's why we're here. We're here to learn how to live in a living universe. And this is a realm of just getting a hold of ourselves, learning how to interact, engage with life, and in the process, engage with ourselves and the rest of the universe. So it's a learning system. So we're doing good work here. And the work now requires us to move beyond the passivity and the kind of mindset of materialism and into a mindset of mindfulness, reflective consciousness, recognizing if we do that, it will take us beyond that into unity consciousness, and then beyond that into creativity.
Yeah, I agree, and I have a little extra, you know, the thing that I see is, I think it's wonderful that people are awakening and working, you know, doing yoga and meditating and becoming mindful. You know, mindfulness is not a big deal anymore. You know, I mean, you can actually bring it into organizations, and they, you know, it's entered into mainstream, which is fantastic, obviously, you know, in Google and I don't know, various places. But it's also, it was developed inside of this last paradigm, which was also very designed by men, quite, you know, by the masculine, you know, which is to awaken through meditation is a more masculine way of moving towards unity. You know, to close one's eyes, to be able to let go of thinking and to let go of the attachment to everything and to enter into a kind of fullness and oneness in that way is more of the last 5,000 years. And it doesn't necessarily bring people into this spondic connection. I mean, I've worked with a lot of meditators. It's actually a different deal. And they can remain, even though they have an sense of oneness, there's still a very sort of individuated sense of self, quite honestly. And so
I agree with that.
I think that, you know, new practices of not just closing your eyes and praying and meditating, but, you know, some of the things that we've been doing, and I'm sure there are other methods, even just looking into each other's eyes, coming from the 96% instead of, you know, just our sense of personality or our humanness, is amazing at how much, like, something opens, and all of a sudden you feel like you're home, and and something opens together that I feel like we also need to innovate quickly and use Zoom and use the internet and use every method we have to find ways to go beyond our individual everything. You know, our individual finding our higher purpose, our individual work on ourselves, our individual healing, our individual, you know, we're so focused on that, we're not actually finding how to fall into that space together and become truly unified. So I do feel passionate about that because it's such a tiny.
I hear that.
You know, there's almost like nobody saying this. You know, even when I talk to these people that I bow to them, you know, they're so brilliant in their ability to express the, you know, even Teilhard's work or the future. But when you ask them, well, how do you do it? they tell you to close your eyes and do some kind of prayer, and you're like, are you kidding? You know, we don't have time to find our, you know, it's so much easier for most human beings to find, to fall through the rabbit hole together. Quite honestly, it's actually faster and it's more reliable. And in my experience, it's more dimensionally rich to experience the oneness when I do it with you. You know, when I end up, you know, having that opportunity together with another human being who's willing. So.
Yes.
Anyway, beautiful. That's my soapbox for our conversation.
Thank you.
No, and
well,
I know you agree. I'm not saying you don't agree. I'm just.
No. I want to amplify that a little bit. I have done so many meditation retreats where I sit there on the cushion, and I sit there in the chair. I'm older. And basically, there's no invitation into the 96% that's invisible. It's rather saying, okay, maybe your back hurts, maybe this is whatever. You're just going to pay attention. Now, watch the thoughts. Yeah, and basically, every input says you're a biological being. You're sitting there on that cushion. And there's not an invitation into the cosmic dimensions of myself.
Wow.
So it implicitly begins and never speaks of that, so of course I think I'm just a body sitting there on the cushion. Why would I think otherwise? No teacher tells me otherwise. Meditation in its traditional form does not facility take us into this more cosmic dimension that you're speaking about. And actually, to the contrary, much of mindfulness meditation, for example, now is used to help people cope with the stresses of staying within a dysfunctional system. So we have businesses that say, yeah, this is really stressful and all the rest, but we'll help you cope with the stress. We'll have periods of mindful meditation. And that's not transforming things. It's really just perpetuating the status quo. So I really agree that we have learning to do to, it's not to negate that, but it's rather to open to this larger reality that we share and we can co-creatively work with to create this new future.
I love you. I got to tell you, I just love you. I mean, I love that you just expressed that so perfectly, because that is so true, Dwayne. Because even when people are doing what they call we space, you know, there's people that are now working in we space kind of things, and it's still the 4%.
Yes.
You know, I'm reflecting back to you. You know, I'm stepping and I'm connecting and I'm telling you what I feel. You know, I'm in response to you or something. You know, which is really good psychologically helpful.
That's right.
You know, for people
That's
to right. see what they don't see. But it has nothing to do with this 96% dimensionally, like,
right.
Because we come from what I'm calling the origination point, which is the 96% element of our identity. It includes the 4%, but it's rooted in something so beyond. And then we literally are there together the moment we step into it, because we are.
We are.
That's right.
Works.
We don't have to find each other. We are that, you know. And then you have like 100 other people that step in there, and the potentials and the world that opens up is ridiculously new.
Yes.
So
yes.
Thank you. I mean, that Love is
that.
Because the whole thing too, like with meditation, you know, when people, I was a friend, one of the women who's a teacher in the work that I'm doing used to work for Google. And I kept thinking, I want them to let me teach them, because I thought Google is this flow consciousness. It's not, how do I learn how to do mindfulness? It's like, I want them to have their eyes open and to go into flow states of ridiculous creativity that's moving at speeds that it feels like timeless. It's timeless, but it's also moving at an incredibly rapid speed.
Yes.
And you don't have to like walk meditatively and go really slow. I mean, no one
that's
is
right.
going to do that in the world that we're moving into. That is not consciousness that's calling to us.
Yeah. So flow consciousness. So people, people know this. You go into Google and say, well, let's talk about flow consciousness. And, well, a whole bunch of hands would go up. Let me tell you my experience in flow consciousness, in sports, in music, with my partner, with community engagements. Flow is something we, as an industrial, dynamic industrial society, we know flow, but we haven't brought the cosmic dimension of flow into our lives. But now that's being invited in, and people say, okay, I know flow. Now let's bring that into flow. And so we are predisposed already, given our history of industrial dynamism and all the rest. We're predisposed to say, I know flow. I know consciousness. Ah, you're talking about bringing that centered consciousness right into the middle of eyes open, let's co-create.
Yeah,
so, yeah,
totally.
It's another paradigm.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's the way. I mean, I think what we need in our organizations and stuff is eyes open, center to center, like hacking into that consciousness, which is part of what we're doing.
Yep.
Is that also your calm, you're everything. You know, I mean, you don't need to like go into quieting everything down. You never stop the flow and the momentum and whatever. So you understand, but I really appreciate what you're saying because that is part of this biocosmic identity and the distinction that you're making about the 96% being within that sense of self is such a brilliant way to point to what is needed. And I really, really appreciate it. It's like, it's really good. I mean, I'm sure you and I will have lots of other conversations that we can, you know, kind of in riffing with each other, like discover dimensionally even better ways of seeing and presenting to the world, how people can shift into a different worldview, which is where we started.
Yeah. And people are there. It isn't like it's like relaxing and growing bigger and say, oh, now I can kind of relax into, I thought I was this, but no one ever let me and told me, and oh, this is great. I'm finally home in this larger sense of self, this larger universe. So, this is a really an inviting experience into a larger sense of home and possibility.
Yeah, thank you so much. Now, the book that you speak the most about this is which one of your books?
Well, currently it's the Living Universe, a book I've worked on for many years. So the Living Universe.
Okay.
And,
And they should just go to Amazon and get the Living Universe. And if they want to find out more about all of what you're doing, it's to go to DwayneElgin.com.
Yes. And they'll find a book, Awakening Earth, that's free to download and articles free to download and such right there on my website.
Wonderful. All right. Yeah. So Duane, DUANE, and then ELGIN.com. And they'll be able to access, you know, more because you're such a rich thinker and prolific author. So there'll be lots of things that they can get lost in if they go there.
Yeah. That's right.
I also want to just say briefly, just because this is, you know, this is the first day, you can also download the first three chapters of the book that I have finally gotten ready and is coming out in October, evolutionaryrelationshipsbook.com. So evolutionaryrelationshipsbook.com if you're interested in doing that. And Duane, just thank you again for, you know, for your work, for your intelligence and your heart and your 96%. I can totally feel it.
Hey, it's a team effort. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, everybody. And I'll talk to you next month.
Thank you for participating.